Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that is basically a remake of itself every week, so what's the big deal actually? It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless of course you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Let's get it popping.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he has an unmitigated wrath for coconuts. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
It's true. Ahoy.
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our first guest this week. He doesn't rise to the occasion. He sinks to the level of his training. It's Jonathan Watkins, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. That was eerily accurate.
And give even more love to our second guest this week. He tries not to walk. He tries not to run. He tries not to stay all day out in the sun. It's Ian Whittington, ladies and gentlemen.
He mostly succeeds at all of those things.
We got a fearsome foursome this week, and I will tell you right off the bat, the reason for that is three of the four of us are celebrating our birthday today. Andrew is the odd man out, but you may not have known this, but myself and two of our Sif Pop guests, occasional guests, all have the exact same birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to be our recording day, May 26th this week. So I thought, you know, it might be fun to do a birthday show. And, you know, there's usually something big that comes out around Memorial Day weekend anyway, which is about when our birthday usually falls. So we may make this kind of like an annual fun birthday show kind of thing if you guys are up for it.
To be decided. We'll see how this goes. I'm not willing to commit.
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate your commitment.
Happy birthday, Mr. Sif President.
Very nice. Presiftent?
Presiftent, yeah. Maybe?
I don't know. So it's our birthday this week. In honor of that, our best ever challenge will be best ever movies that came out around our birthday, like within 24 hours either way. May 25th, 26th, and 27th for those release dates, and we will do that. And then for our movies today, we have two movies that are both right around... 30 years old.
Yep.
And decided to make a new version of them, you know, because that's all we do these days. I was going to say they were from the same decade, but they're not, because Little Mermaid was 89, and I think White Men Can't Jump was like 92.
That sounds right.
93. So,
correct. 92. Yeah.
So, it's wild how everything old is not actually new again. So we're going to get into those reviews as well as have some fun with some other stuff along the way, including our buried treasure. And I have an announcement at the end that I want to get to as well. So stay tuned for that. That's what's known in the biz as a tease.
We finally are going to get to elect a new president of Sif Pop.
Presiftent. Presiftent. Yeah.
This one's getting popped.
All right, let's get into it, guys. Let's kick it off by reviewing the 2023 version of The Little Mermaid.
You broke the rules. You went to the above world.
A man was drowning. I had to save him.
This obsession with humans has to stop.
I just want to know more about them. Don't!
Poor child.
I can help you. You can't live in that world unless you become a human yourself.
Is that even possible?
It's what I live for.
The youngest of King Triton's daughters and the most defiant, Ariel. Why am I even saying this? We all know what the Little Mermaid is.
Ariel.
Yeah, the Little Mermaid is back. Disney is doing its thing.
This time, it's aquatic.
Dude, I was going to say, that would have been better. Like a...
Yeah, like a horror reboot or something like that.
Make the actual Brothers Grimm version of the story. The
Hans Christian Andersen version. That's what we want.
Oh, that's, yeah.
So yeah, it's back, and we're dealing with a different group of people. It is live action as opposed to animated, although plenty of it is also still animated. I think David Diggs is the voice of Sebastian, which is
indeed
interesting and cool. Holly Bailey, not Holly Berry, is the Little Mermaid, and several other people. I think Melissa McCarthy is Ursula. So what did you guys think? Oh, and Rob Marshall, by the way, directing this.
And Javier Bardem. Thank you.
We'll get there. I just wanted a dub over No Country for Old Men quotes all over his performance in here. All right, let's get into it. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Jonathan, kick us off.
I'm just going to go with didn't like it.
All right, didn't like it from Jonathan. Andrew, what about you?
Hindsight liked it.
High side liked it. Very nice. Ian.
You're going to love it compared to us then. It's okay. Just okay.
I'm on the high side of okay. I think there's enough here that kind of tips me over to the high side of okay. But Andrew, it's your favorite movie of the year, so you get to go first.
Absolutely.
Tell us about some of the things that make you say you like this movie.
It's beautiful.
And you said High Side liked it. High Side of liked it.
No, High Side liked it, yeah. I mean, this is a gorgeous movie. There are some sequences that are under the water that are just breathtaking. There's like a... I just think of moments like whenever King Triton has like this cape of like a shimmerfish, you know, like following him, and it's just...
Yeah, that was very cool.
It's just it's stuff like that is just... Man, it's just a cool movie to look at. So... And I think another thing that actually makes me like this movie, considering most people know how infamously I despise live-action remakes of Disney movies, is because that I think that this one actually had... It did something different than the first one. And I think that what I think this one did differently is it leaned more towards there being a purpose, like this kind of animosity between the surface dwellers and the fish... And the people of the sea, you know, and
it at least made it a two-sided theme, right?
Yeah, like there was exactly.
It rounded out the landlubber side of the equation a little bit. Yeah,
exactly. Because if you remember from the first Little Mermaid, it's just King Triton and the merfolk who are
really
against of people. But I don't think even in that version, I don't think humans even know that mermaids and stuff are real.
I don't think we spend enough time with them to really find out anything.
The land people in the first one are not the point. They are completely... Yeah. Even Eric is completely secondary in that first movie. Like, it's... I mean, he is just an object of, flirtation in that movie. So that's expanded a little bit.
Yeah. So I like how they really fleshed out the human characters.
Nice. So. Anybody else who wants to jump in? Tell us some of their other thoughts on the movie.
Well, I feel mean now since Andrew liked it so much. I didn't hate it. It was just one of those things where I'm just watching it. I'm like, I don't know who this movie's for. I know why they're doing these things because they keep making money, but I just still like, as me as someone, I love the original. And that doesn't mean you can't make a good remake of it. I think you can. There's been a few of these that I've enjoyed. I don't think I've really highly liked any of them, but I've enjoyed some more than others. This one was kind of in the middle for me. I actually the underwater stuff I didn't think looked great. I thought it was about on the same level as like Aquaman. I just the flowing hair and stuff, for some reason that always like makes it look weird to me.
You know what it is for me with that? I was thinking about this. I think it's the cognitive dissonance of the body acting like it's underwater, but they're just speaking clearly.
Yeah.
I know how humans speak on land, and I know what happens when humans try to speak underwater. I've been underwater. I understand how it works. So it's God. So there's a little cognitive dissonance there to see like the hair floating around like it's in water, and then they're just talking. That's a little weird.
Can you imagine if Christopher Nolan directed people talking underwater?
Oh my goodness. Just put the camera there on the outside of the tank.
Yeah, Bane would be speaking like perfect English in comparison. Yeah, I don't. I was also confused. Okay, so, and this could have just been my screening. It was very dark. A lot of the underwater stuff, it was, especially like the Ursula scene.
Ursula
the
stuff
end,
was dark.
I could barely even tell what was going on. I think
I
part
think
of
that,
too,
was purposeful.
Is,
they didn't
want to show the ship.
They did not. Well, they didn't want to show giant Ursula. I think they knew they didn't have.
Oh, okay.
The budget.
The model down the way it needed
to be. I was thinking
be.
They didn't want to show the ship, you know, piercing into her, which I thought was weird because they did that in the animated one, which was G. You know, I don't know. That was interesting. Melissa McCarthy, the acting's fine. Melissa McCarthy's is different here, which I enjoyed.
I love her in this.
Yeah. Holly Bailey, very nice, has a wonderful singing voice.
Oh my goodness.
The guy who played Eric, could have maybe.
Yeah. I still don't understand why our resident understudy didn't get the call to fulfill that role. Sorry, Phil.
Yeah.
You'll always be my Prince Eric.
Yeah, Javier Bardem's fine. I mean, he's always good. He's fine. I don't know. Most of it for me was just I've seen this movie before, and there wasn't anything in there that was making it different enough for me to like appreciate it on any other level. I think it's a perfectly fine looking retelling. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it in that sense, so maybe it is okay. But like, there wasn't a whole lot there for me. If you're a huge fan of the original, I don't know why this one's gonna be different for you, but I don't know. Maybe it is for some people. The other thing I started really getting confused about though was they seem to be making a point about the underwater people not liking the humans because, you know, they just like they kill them and eat them and all that kind of stuff, like the fish and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But like there's that scene where the stork, who's their friend, goes in the water and eats a fish right by them. And then they just go up and start talking to her. Like,
it's
cool.
No big deal. It's just like, hey, just swallow my brother whole.
And the mermaids and the mermen. I mean, Javier Bardem like picks a shrimp that's trying to get by him and just eats it. I don't know. That was something like, I guess I didn't think about stuff like that in the animated version. I don't know why, but like in this one, it just stood out to me more. Maybe because I felt like they were preaching a little more in this one, you know, about how we destroy the waters and oceans and we pollute them. And I don't know.
Yeah. Another thing I kind of didn't get is like, if they're mad about shipwrecks and they control the weathers, like the seas, why are you making so many shipwrecks? You know?
Well, I think part of that might have been because the humans say the people under the sea keep deliberately wrecking our ships. So I think there's a misnomer on both sides. Because I think that was the only different thing I liked about the movie, that it brought a bit more of a balance to that argument and why they were butting heads. The rest of the movie, I loved it when I watched it in 1989. But there wasn't quite enough.
Before you were born?
Yes.
I think one good example for me was the Under the Sea number. The Under the Sea number is one of my all-time favorite Disney numbers. That might even be my favorite Disney number, the way it's done in the animated film. And in this film, even though they could have done whatever they wanted, it seemed really flat. And like there just wasn't a lot of like life to it compared to what they did in the animated film, which had to be hand-drawn and was obviously more painstaking of a process. And so I think it was just stuff like that there was it just seemed to be like going through the motions. I mean, obviously Andrew saw it differently, which is awesome.
No. I think I had
that was how I felt.
Go ahead, Aaron. Sorry.
I had the exact same experience during Just Can't Wait to Be King and The Lion King. And I think it's that exact same thing of you're making the worst version of your story. Like you are limiting yourself by making this live action, because you're not only limiting expression and the ability, you know, the abilities that animation has to go bigger, but you're also limiting the movie's ability to play in unrealistic waters, right? Literally, like you're limiting the ability of the movie to have other fish playing marambas and, mm-hmm. you know, turtles doing whatever, because you're trying to make it photorealistic, and it's a bridge too far for suspension of disbelief to, you know, kind of go there. Yeah. And so you're just like, okay, we're good with flounder. We're good with scuttle. We're, you know, we're good with the, but even the eels don't talk in this one.
No.
Right. So we're we're good with flounder. We're good with scuttle. And we're good with Sebastian. And yeah. other than that, it's all going to just be, you know, like it,
sushi.
Like it was. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I totally get all of that.
And we have to mention that this is the state-of-the-art island that these humans live on that has futuristic technology, like steel pan drums and modern trumpets, you know, in this... What is this, 1700s era or 1800s, you know?
Yeah. I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so. It's the kind of the
or it's the village. It's like
yeah, they all just kind of
or it's the village, it's the village. They still travel by sail.
Yeah. Ian, did you have any further thoughts? I don't think you've really kind of given your full general thoughts.
Yeah, I think Jonathan's kind of nailed the word for me, and it was flat. Everything felt flat. There were a few really gorgeous moments under the sea, but most of it felt very dark to me, very flat, very muted. I think a lot of the songs were very muted, other than what Halle Bailey sang. She was incredible. Mm-hmm. Melissa McCarthy's rendition was incredible as well. She's actually my favorite part of the movie until then. Yeah. Turn her into one of the statues from Eternals. But she was incredible. And just, this is a Melissa McCarthy that I want to see. I'm really fed up of the, isn't she an unlikely hero, Melissa McCarthy in a movie thing. She was just like lapping up the evilness, the mustache twirliness. I completely dug it. Pretty much every other performance felt like a pantomime to me. It felt like it was a bad Broadway or off-Broadway show. Everything just, it didn't feel like we were in a movie. It felt like I was watching this on stage, which is great, but I'm not. I haven't got the atmosphere of it being on stage. I'm watching it on a screen, so I just feel like I wasn't in on the atmosphere. And
Javier Bardem looks confused. Like, he looks right? like he's like,
I was, this was going to be about? One of my first points. You guys have talked about him being fine. I thought he was terribly cast in this movie.
Yeah, totally agree.
I didn't buy into Javier Bardem nice. As King Triton for a second in this movie. So,
he looked so lost.
There's an SNL sketch where they were doing like the Star Wars auditions, and there's like one of them's Alan Alda, and he's like, What is this? What's a Wookiee?
Oh, Bill Hader's Alan Alda.
Yeah. And that's what I felt like Javier Bardem must have been asking the whole time. Like, what am I holding? What is this?
What am I holding?
What he's holding is probably the biggest paycheck of anybody in that movie, is what I think he's holding. The middle third in particular just felt like a meandering, what's the thing? It's got the lazy rivers. It was just a lovesick, lazy river that did not work for me. And then we're back to a musical number, which, guess what? I loved in 1989 when the person who wrote it back then as well, because it's still great. The addition by Lin-Manuel Miranda was, of course, incredible. I was like, where has this song and this rap come from? It belongs in a different movie because it's incredible. And then the credits rolled, and it was like,
was that the Scuttlebutt song?
The Scuttlebutt song.
Yeah,
the Scuttlebutt song. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I thought that was new. Scuttlebutt is like one of my favorite things.
Of course
it was. I love Scuttlebutt.
It was so, so good.
That, I guarantee you, that it was an earworm. I've just been in my head and going, Scuttlebutt. Yeah. But it's, I guarantee you that is going to be a song in about a week and a half that everybody in the world hates. Because it's just because it's everywhere. It's going to flood the market.
I don't necessarily see it going kind of the Let It Go kind of model like that. I don't know that it's that big. Plus, there were two other new songs. Like, there were three new songs in this.
The Prince Eric song was so,
I thought it was okay. I liked the lyricism of it. I liked the way it was the things, like, the lyrics were really interesting to it. I liked that. And it added some to the theme. And he was fine. I just think it comes back to, and I'll say a few other things. I think it does come back to a lot of what we're talking about, is the human performances in this movie are just so just there's just such a lack of life to them in my other than the two versions of Ursula.
Yes,
both versions of Ursula were great.
They were in the right movie.
Loved them both. Every other human performance I just felt was just really, really lifeless. Mm-hmm. So that was really rough for me. Now, I enjoyed the vocal performances. I enjoyed Daveed Diggs. I really like Awkwafina as Scuttle. I thought that was inspired casting. Mm-hmm. I thought she's great and was perfect for that. And actually, Jacob Tremblay was great as Flounder, too. That was a really nice voice performance.
Oh, yeah, Flounder's on this movie.
Oh, man, that scene with the shark I hated so much. I have a silicophobia, so sharks. And I totally forgot. I don't know why. It wasn't until that scene started that I'm like, oh, wait, this is underwater and there are sharks and I'm scared to death of sharks. Why am I here?
No, I am too. I am too. Because, like, animated sharks even scare me. It's, like, crazy. Yeah. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I just thought there was such little life to the human performances. And because we're trying to make it realistic and be in this human world, I just did not think it was able to capture the magic in the same way as the original. And I also don't think it updated the story enough for me. Yes, there's a little bit of balance between, you know, the dry and the wet, you know, like the water world, not the movie, and the dry land. But overall, we are hitting the exact same beats of Ariel's tale, except for one exception at the end, which I don't understand how it really changes any. I think it's supposed to add to her agency, but I don't think it does that. I think it's actually a weird decision because it puts her in a I'm trying to think how not to spoil this. It puts her in an emotional state that the movie has not said that she is looking to be in this movie at all. And I think there is I was crossing my fingers that they would change the story up a little bit and really play off of the idea of what it means to be a woman who loses who they are because of a man, you know, kind of idea. And the idea that maybe the Ursula character and the Ariel character are kind of parallel lives that split somewhere, right? Yeah. And that Ursula is the way she is because she was bitter about giving up herself, you know, for a man, and really just doesn't want Ariel to make the same mistakes, but she's, you know what I mean? Like, there's a really interesting version in there somewhere, but it just decided to do the same movie again, and, you know, I get it.
I think it put a lot of that effort into mirroring Ariel and Eric's background and how they both have these oppressive parents.
With they both have treasure rooms, they're both
in worlds that they don't necessarily want to be in. But that's
Eric's
just not a big enough change for me.
Sorry.
No, go on.
Eric's obsession with finding Ariel, though, in a live action format, came off kind of creepy.
It was like, creepy in the original too.
I guess it is. I haven't seen the original.
They're both kind of creepy.
Yeah.
The immediacy of their attraction to each other is more
than
attraction.
Should not lead to marriage within a week.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, I think it doesn't here, but yeah.
Also, when she turns into a mermaid in front of everybody, not one person like runs away. Like, everybody's just looking at her. Eric's mom's even like, that's weird. She's a sea creature.
Huh, she's a sea creature.
So I feel like there's not enough really to... there's more here than there was in Lion King. Mm-hmm. I will say that. Lion King is, I think, the primo example of... don't change a thing. Just try to make it live action. You know,
is it worse than Dumbo?
What's that?
Is Lion King worse than Dumbo? I haven't seen Lion King, but Dumbo was terrible.
No, Dumbo was terrible.
Dumbo's the worst.
Dumbo, I think, is the worst of. Okay. Well, Peter Pan and Wendy is pretty bad too. But
I didn't watch that.
But Dumbo is bad in like movie ways. Whereas I just mean the Lion King is just so much the same movie. There are a couple changes, but they don't mean anything. I think
there's no real people in it, right? It's all CG.
That as well.
Isn't it?
That as well. Yeah. And there are a few more changes here, but it's not enough for me. But I still there's enough here. Like, the songs are they're great songs, and they're sung very well. And I did like some of the note progression changes on some of the moments in songs. It's hard to do a cover of your own song and change it in any way that makes it better. But I think there are a couple of good choices in that regard here. So there's enough that I would be on the high side of okay, but I cannot say that I liked this movie because mm-hmm. I didn't.
I liked how you guys were, I guess something that you didn't like is something that I did like, and it's how they mirrored Ariel and Eric's stories. I found that it made their romance that much more believable than the original one where they just see each other. Like this one, you can see that they have shared, you know, like hobbies and stuff. Like he's mm-hmm. showing her around his, you know, his treasure room and stuff. And the fact that they're both driven by this desire to experience new. And that's what I love most in this movie is Eric's, if he's going to be king, he doesn't want to be a king who secludes himself. He wants to be a king who's open to the world, who doesn't want to deny his people the experiences of the world. And I think that Ariel wants the exact same thing for the merfolk. So, yeah, I think that it works a lot better in this one than it did in the original. As for the songs, yeah, I think besides Poor Unfortunate Soul, I think that all the songs in the animated version were better, but I do think that this version of Poor Unfortunate Soul with Melissa McCarthy was better than the original mm-hmm. one.
Yeah. I think Part of Your World is much better in this one. I think the Holly Bailey version of Part of Your World is mind-blowing. I think she just... And that's nothing against Jodie Benson, because she kills it in those songs as mm-hmm. well, but it's just... It's so much fuller, and there's more interesting things happening. I really did enjoy the music. It may be my favorite part, actually, is hearing the music kind of reinterpreted and in a theater. Mm. And yeah, I'm always gonna dig that kind of stuff. Any final thoughts?
No post credit scenes.
Jonathan and Ian, any final thoughts?
No agency for Ariel. Still.
Jonathan?
I think if you really want to see it, though, I think you're going to have a decent enough time with it. Like, I don't think you're going to regret going to see it or anything.
No, I think
like
your kids
that.
Will enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's fine. I just wish it was
Listen,
better,
if I can sit fine. Here and say, you know, Super Mario Brothers movie is worth seeing with your kids, I can sit here and say The Little Mermaid is
worth seeing. Wish I'd be on the show for that one.
We're seeing with your kids.
Stupid movie.
I think my one last thing... I think there was a great change in one of the songs that yeah, I really, really appreciated. They finally fixed a very problematic line in Kiss the Girl, which I thought was good.
But they still kept Down Where It's Wetter. They still kept that.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Yes, absolutely.
I feel like such a kid when I hear that, because I'm just like...
there were some highlights there, but yeah,
was no penis castle on this, right?
No,
penis
they did castle? A good job. Yeah, the castles were a little less phallic. So yeah, I hope they were a little less phallic. That they've been
yeah,
it'd be very bad news.
If I were to hear that they overcorrected, then I need to go talk to a physician.
Well, that made them too yonic.
Yes, yeah. All right, there you go. That's The Little Mermaid. We will move on to our next review. This time, we're going to do a movie that remakes a movie from about 30 years ago. We're going to talk a little bit about White Men Can't Jump 2023.
Hey, they're letting yoga instructors in the gym now.
Ball!
I just noticed you're not getting enough legs on a new shot. Are you dehydrated?
$100, you can't make more shots.
Let's just do 300.
It's not my dad's money.
We ain't never gonna get a reparation that way, bro.
So I prefer Venmo or Zelle, but you seem like a Cash App guy, so.
Seemingly opposite street hoopers, Jeremy, an injury-prone former star, and Kamal, a has-been prodigy, team up to take one final shot at living out their dreams. This is, of course, the a remake of the Wesley Snipes and Hamish version from 1992. Woody Harrelson, that's his name. What did you guys... I guess I'm going to ask this before we talk about like it. like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay. Who has seen the original White Man Can't Jump the most recently? It's probably been...
Oh, I probably have seen it the most recently.
20 years.
3 days ago?
No, okay.
Oh, no, it's you then.
Okay. I did rewatch it because it had been like 2 or 3 years since I'd seen it.
Yeah.
I do watch this movie all the time. I love it. The original one.
Oh, great. Well, good. I'll probably start with you then. So, what do you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was it just okay, Andrew?
Low side of okay.
Ian?
I am not qualified in any sense. I have not seen the original. I have not watched any basketball. I am a white man that can jump. However, I'm the high side of liked it.
Okay, high side of liked it. Jonathan?
Man, I'm just mean today. It's too harmless to hate, but I'm on the low side of didn't like it.
Low side of didn't Oof. Like it.
Aaron?
I am hovering between high side of okay and low side of liked it. Hmm. I'm going to say low side of liked it, I think is where I'm going to land on this one. I should mention, I guess, possibly, critics are tearing this movie apart. I think it has like a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. Interesting.
Not that bad.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit more about it. Ian, since it's your favorite movie of the year, why don't you kick us off?
I don't know, man. Maybe it was coming off of the back of The Little Mermaid because this was our double feature, but it made me laugh. I had no basis of comparison against the original, which is a thing that can happen, as we've seen with The Little Mermaid. So I was just along for the ride. I think they have great chemistry. All of it felt authentic, which is hard because this isn't a part of the world that I know much about. I don't know much about basketball. I know less about the world of street basketball. But everything looked authentic. Nothing felt like a setup or a gimme, really. I always struggle with sports ball movies because I said this to you in the moment, Aaron. Mm-hmm. When they were doing the setup for the big competition at the end, I'm like, well, does it matter if they win or not? I feel like I should be rooting for them, but I don't care because I know we're getting a movie anyway, and that's not the moral of the story. So I struggle to get invested in sports movies in general because I don't really care if they win or lose because something's going to be learned from the journey. But
so can I dig in on that a little bit? Is that because sports for you don't hold meaning? So a win or a loss, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose.
No,
like whereas like when it's a band of rebels trying to take down the Death Star. Like, winning means something because you can put yourself over in that position.
It's not that, because I get it. I get how invested people get
you're
in sports.
You're a competitive person. I know for
I'm
a
very
fact
competitive.
You're a competitive person.
So I get it. I get the investment. But
he's the most competitive
rich
person at CinemaSense.
Probably by a fair margin.
I love that. But, very nicely done.
But I know this is written. So I know somebody has decided the outcome of, unless it's based on a true story or whatever, I know someone's artificially decided who the winner is going to be. So with sports, there is an unknown. There is anybody could come and do it. Mm-hmm. But the ending is written, which I know doesn't matter, but it takes away some of my enjoyment because it's already been decided.
So
it's so weird that you don't like sports then, because in sports you don't know. So I would think you would.
Yeah, no,
I
love sports.
What he's saying is he's saying that he has a pretty good idea of who's going to win at the end of the movie. So the actual basketball portion of the movie, he doesn't feel as invested in. Is that right, Ian?
It's more than that. Even if I don't know who's going to win, I don't care because someone else wrote it. So it's not based on anybody's skill.
Oh.
It's been written by a person that's just decided they're going
to
win.
But you know that logic could apply to every single movie,
right? I was
going
to say every single movie is written by a person.
Like, you
but
know
it's different.
Doesn't,
but
like,
unless it's an autobiography.
Skywalker, because you know that somebody wrote the ending.
I don't know that he's going to win. I don't.
But you just said it didn't matter if they're going to win or not.
Straw man arguments flying around. The whole point of sports is that it's not fixed and that is not decided.
That's not the whole point of sports.
Shut up.
That is not the whole point of sports.
You're asking the wrong
person.
It does
get fixed occasionally, too.
I know it does. So we're clear. I know. Which is ironic considering it's unfixing it. But anyway, it's... The whole point is that there's this mystery to it. And when you write who's going to win, it's now not about anything to do with the sport. It's just, I guess this person wins. So it's more about the story. So I,
whereas the point of Star Wars is obviously the Empire's going to win.
Yeah.
Got it. Got it.
This is a big apples to oranges argument.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's what I'm trying to zoom in on, is what makes sports different from narrative. Like, because they're both narratives. Just one involves talent on a court or a field and the other involves talent with a mystical blade, you know?
Let's say, don't belittle stones.
Professional wrestling combines them both.
No, exactly. I don't think that he's belittling you. He's genuinely trying to make an honest comparison.
I'm trying to find the seed of the difference.
I think what it is, if you took Star Wars and put it into the real world, you had Luke against the Death Star and all of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no idea how that's going to play out.
Right.
And that's it's just, whoa, anything's going to happen. Right. They're at war and stuff.
Same for this movie.
With sports... with a sport... Wait,
you put it in the real world.
Shut up. With a sports, with a sports movie... You can't apply the same thing applies to a movie. When you put Star Wars into a movie format,
okay,
then
the only way it has been.
Yeah, someone's decided the ending, haven't they?
They sure have.
Okay.
Ian, I think what you're trying to say is like sports are supposed to be enjoyed in the moment, and as like once you know the outcome after it's done, then you're done with that sporting moment. And you're on to the next one.
I guess.
Whereas a movie you can revisit.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought it would be an argument about the relative importance or gravitas of the moment.
Yeah.
That's where I thought the difference was for you. But
I'm not too sure my argument holds much weight, but it is how I feel.
Fair enough.
I'm not going to try and convince anyone else to feel the same way, but it is how I feel.
It's an interesting philosophical experiment, and I will probably continue to dig on it just because I'm curious, like where I don't want to spend our whole show trying to figure out your inherent trauma with sports, but
let's go there. Let's unpack that, shall we? But back to the movie itself, the jokes landed. I thought it was incredibly funny. My biggest letdown, and it stopped me from loving it, it's just the same old emotional beats.
It really is.
I get it. I know we quote unquote need them, but we don't. It's the same old money problems, let down the partner, lying to your spouse. It all works out because you do some big gesture. This is a rom-com from the 90s shoved into a funny sports ball movie.
Yeah, I'll go next. I definitely agree with everything you just said, and I think the tropey stuff, the saccharine stuff, is the reason I have the hardest time like firmly being like, yeah, I like this movie. Is just because it really is so paint by numbers in so many ways.
So dumb.
What saves it and allows me to say, yeah, I like this movie. Is that I, like you, think these two work really well together. I really bought into their relationship.
Yeah.
And they both made me laugh. The side characters made me laugh a lot.
Oh, they were great.
So when I'm laughing consistently, I'm just going to have a good time. And I'm going to be more likely to overlook things that might get me distracted before or whatever. Plus, you add the fact that basketball is easily my favorite sport, and this movie gets basketball. It understands hoops. Like, it really gets the street nature of it combined with the technical precision of it. Like, it's using ideas and, you know, plays and different things that really make sense. It's actually one of the things I remember not liking about the original is I didn't believe for a second Wesley Snipes could play basketball. And both of these players can hoop. And I really enjoyed that part.
It was fun watching you watch this movie. Like, you got really zoned in on the actual
gameplay. Like the original at all?
It's been too long since I've seen it to really declare, because I watched movies with completely different eyes than I did when this movie came out.
Yeah.
And I saw it the first time. However, I remember thinking the basketball was lacking for me, and therefore it was harder for me to buy in. Although I also remember thinking Woody Harrelson was absolutely hilarious.
It's interesting watching that movie again, like as an adult, because I hadn't seen it since like 92, and then we send it, and I co-wrote that script with a fellow center Daniel Cardoso, and so I watched it a couple times about a month ago, and I hadn't seen it since I was a teenager, and it's also one of those movies too. It's one of those moments that rarely happens where you have these two people that just become movie stars, like right in front of you in that movie. Like that was their movie, where mm-hmm. Harrelson and Snipes. Plus, you've got Ron Shelton, and I don't think he should. That dude can make a sports film. Like he was involved in Bull Durham. He was involved in Tin Cup, White Men Can't Jump. You know, I mean, that guy can make a sports film. I thought it was interesting. The director of this also did the House Party remake. From earlier this year. So I thought that was this guy's got an interesting trend going here where he's making remaking early 90s movies. But yeah, I just it's like this. I'm glad Ian enjoyed it so much. I don't want to like crap all over him.
Please crap on it.
I liked Jack Harlow a heck of a lot more than I thought I would. I will say that. I didn't want to see this movie because when I've seen him in real life in like thing in situations, he irritates the crap out of me. So
I've never
and it's
seen
nothing personal. He might be the nicest guy in the world. It's just, you know, there's just some people that just kind of rub you the wrong way for whatever reason when you see them doing something. Sequel Walls, I don't know that I had really seen him in anything else. He'd been in a couple things I might have seen him in, but I thought he was really good.
Lights.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay. I did know him from that. That's right. I liked him quite a bit in this. I thought he was really good. They do play off well to each other.
That's my biggest pro for the movie. They do. They have good chemistry together.
Yeah, they do. One thing that, and I mean, I'm fine with remakes. I mean, but one thing I thought was interesting was like in the original, I completely understood like why Wesley Snipes went to Woody Harrelson and said, "Hey, let's go, you know, hustle some people." I didn't really completely get it in this movie. First off, Jack Harlow is not even trying to hustle him in the beginning.
Right,
Jack Harlow's just like a guy teaching. That just happened. He doesn't shut his mouth, and he just said a comment like, "Hey, you might want to do this for your shooting." And he was like, "Well, come see if you can beat me in the best of five." I mean, I don't think that was purposeful. I think that just happened. So that felt a little less authentic that they
I
got
totally
in that
agree.
Situation.
I think the hustle stuff is forced in, even though it's kind of funny. Like, it's for that character does not feel like a hustler. It feels like a teacher, like you said, Andrew. He feels like a teacher.
Well, that's what he's doing. That's why he's at the gym. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to train kids that are going to college or whatever. I also found it hard to believe nobody knew who he was, because at that one point, Sequel Walls like did some research on Harlow's character
Gonzaga.
And found out he played at Gonzaga. Who would not know, like actual basketball people, I'm saying, that would be playing in these street games. They wouldn't have recognized him. I also couldn't figure out why Sequel Walls' character couldn't find somebody else that hadn't had two blown ACLs to play in that tournament with him. So my problem with it early on was that I just didn't buy that the way things progressed did not make sense to me.
Yeah.
And so I started off very early just not buying into any of this. And so it did win me back a little bit as it kept going, because they are very, very good together. I will not deny that. But there was just nothing that I could really grab onto by that point. So that was kind of my problem with it.
Andrew, some thoughts?
Yeah, it's one of those movies that I just can't help but since I've seen the first one so many times, just constantly look at like the different elements and compare them. I do think that Jack Harlow and Cinque Walls are great together. I think that Snipes and Harrelson, that this is a different movie in the sense that I don't think that these guys are as frenemy-ish as Snipes and Harrelson were. I think that here they kind of jab at each other, but there's never any animosity in it. Whereas if you watch the old 92 one, I could believe at any second that Harrelson or Snipes was going to bite the other dude's head off.
Well, and part of that is, again, the Harlow character is so different than the Harrelson character. Like, yeah. It's meditation, and it's, you know, like, it's just a different thing.
Harrelson and Snipes are not good guys in the first movie. Whereas here, these are two guys just trying to get by. In the first one, you know, they're, like, conning people, and they're like, they owe money to like drug cartels and stuff like that. Like, it's it's serious business. It was the original Uncut Gems. It's a story about the traumas of gambling addiction.
Right. It's one of the best things. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, and whenever you take out that important message in it, that's what I feel is super lacking in this version. This movie isn't really saying anything, it's just showing stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think one of the most interesting things about the original is, and I guess I won't spoil it, but what happened, the end result between Woody Harrelson and Rosie Perez, their relationship, that is just something that nobody ever does, the way they end that, if that makes sense. I just don't want to give it away, but it's just, yeah, it's very real. Yeah. And I'm not saying the original doesn't have a lot of silly moments. It absolutely does. It has a lot of comedy. You got the guy going in, the famous scene where the guy goes and tries to rob the liquor store, the gas station, and the guy knows who he is. Like, is that you?
Just ends up selling him the gun.
He tries
to sell him the gun he just tried to rob him with. It's great.
I agree with you. I think the original has a lot more to say than this. And movies don't have to always have something to say, but that is definitely a difference.
Yeah.
I do think that this movie did have something to say whenever it came to living up to a legacy or you know, trying to fulfill a destiny, which is going to kind of lead
that's
me.
That's the stuff, though. That's the stuff that's so, as you know, old as moldy bread. Like, it's just, we've seen that theme and idea so many times in this exact same way.
Maybe it's just because Lance Redding just passed that I'm feeling a lot of more weight. A lot of it.
Totally. Yeah, I think the real world can sneak in there because we know that Lance just died recently. Yeah.
He's good. He's good in it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's see. Let's do one last thing. What do you guys, what's one more thing that you want to mention about this movie?
No post-credit scene.
I'm just going to go with the visceral...
Every single time he jumps
and then his knee. But it was strange because it was on, like, while he was in mid air, like, they suddenly went and I'm just I just cringed every time. It was visceral.
The last time it happened was weird to me because he had an easy layup and he missed it for some reason and then got injured. Like, he should have gotten injured trying for that. Because he shouldn't have missed that layup. He wasn't injured when he went up for the layup. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
And this wasn't even really white man can't jump. It was more white man can't jump because he has two busted ACLs.
Yeah, the first one is white man can't jump because he's white. This one is white man can't jump because his knees are gone.
White man can't jump and probably shouldn't.
White man can't afford knee replacement surgery.
I also do love the director's name, though. Calmatic. That's boss.
Very, very cool.
That's a pretty sweet name.
I think
not be able to pull that off. I'm like, hey, guys, my name's Calmatic. Like, no.
Jonathan, did you have one last thing?
Just that. I like the director's name.
My one last thing is I really love when a movie can wade into racial conversation, and there's a lot of racial conversation here, and it's done with humor, and it's done with love, and I thought done with authenticity. It felt very, you know, a very authentic way for in the Jack Harlow character, much like I'm assuming, this is a complete assumption, I don't know, I haven't done any research, much like I'm assuming Jack Harlow himself has spent a lot of time in the culture. Like, he's, you know, definitely... you know,
but he's a hip hop artist too. So,
correct.
I mean,
he's ingratiated himself into the culture, and you know, so I think there's a freedom and an ability there for them to talk about whiteness and blackness and what that means that I really enjoy, because it is difficult sometimes to have those conversations. You know, we're currently on a podcast with four white guys. You know what I mean? Like, there are, you know, and that's not to say we don't have people of color on the podcast. We do often, and purposefully so. but those conversations aren't always easy to have in in our world. And so I like when entertainment can wade into those things and show us how it might sound like, what it might look like, what it, you know, because it allows us to have empathy, right? It allows us to understand what the world is for somebody else and how they might see something else. So,
not the race part, but I was thinking when we were reviewing Little Mermaid, I was like, man, this is the people that everybody wants to hear. Like, this is who they want to go by for their Little Mermaid opinions. For over 30 adults, adult men.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very true. Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan, for pointing out the pointlessness of this podcast today. With that in mind, we'll continue on. All right. Before we head on to our best ever challenge, big thank you to our absolutely wonderful, wonderful SIFPOP members. Thank you so much for your support of what goes on here. If you never checked it out, I'd encourage you to do so if you're interested. It's at Patreon, patreon.com/SIFPOP. Andrew is running the pre-show these days, and we talked about some of the latest news that's heading out into the pop culture world and told some birthday stories on the pre-show for our VIPs. So thank you if you're doing that, and thank you for, listen, thank you just for watching and telling other people about the show. Like, that's, you know, that is enough to thank you for, but to go that extra level and actually throw a couple bucks our way each month is, we don't take it lightly. So thank you for doing that. Again, that's patreon.com/SIFPOP.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right on to the best ever challenge. A really weird one today, but why not? Best ever movies that came out within 24 hours of our birthday. So, or at least the birthday of three of us. May 26th is the birthday, so anything.
Oh, no. I have one that's for May 28th. Is that okay?
Oh, that was not within the range, Jonathan.
I did not hear that.
Read your emails. Is 525 through 527 is the range that we're going with.
Well, they might have had a Thursday night preview.
That used to be a thing.
yes, it is still a thing, actually. Sometimes it even goes to like a Thursday afternoon preview. Like, it just keeps extending back on the weekend.
Yeah, Little Mermaid came out on Thursday. I don't know why they're calling that a preview. The theater I went to started at 3 o'clock. They had like 20 showings.
Yeah, we had 2 o'clock.
That is an
showing opening.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it opened on Thursday. You know, it's. Yeah. The Little Mermaid came out on 525, not 526, but whatever. All right, we'll go number five to number one. If you have it higher than somebody else, you can
trump.
You can trump it.
You guys are still using that term, huh? All right.
Yes. Listen, it was around the better before one. Him.
No, I love it. I love it. I think you should own it.
All right.
Reclaim it.
So we'll start at number five and go to number one. I'll kick us off. My number five movie came out in 2012, I believe on May 25th. And that was The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, is at my number five. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this movie. This is kind of one of a few movies that, were kind of really popular in the early 2010s. Especially coming out of England, doing kind of the older actors get together and do an ensemble piece kind of movie. And this is one I really, really enjoyed. I wasn't alone. They made a sequel. So clearly there were enough people who also enjoyed it. But if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's really, really good. So check out The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
I am ashamed that I have not even heard of this movie.
I've heard of it. I have not heard of this movie. I love the cast.
That's insane.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, that sounds like an Ian movie. So,
I mean, you might like it. I mean, I'll just give you this cast. You know, Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, Bill Nighy, Tom Wilkinson, Dev Patel. So yeah, this is
Love a great Actually cast. In a Hotel.
Yeah,
not on Christmas.
Is it really?
No.
Okay,
it is not.
Good.
No, I'm kidding. I have no
idea.
The
poster makes it look like that.
No, it's really good. It's really, really good. So it comes.
I like Dev Patel on the motorcycle with his arm raised, like, yes.
Let's go.
It's like a say anything moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got the girl.
Andrew, why don't you go next? What's your number five?
Mine came out in 2012. It's a Wes Anderson film called Moonrise Kingdom. Hit it, Aaron. Trap!
All right. Jonathan, what's your number five?
My number five, I guess I'll say that till afterwards, but I just thought it was interesting. I didn't realize my dates were like this. But anyways, this is one that's totally fine. It came out on May 27th. And I will love any of you if you have this higher. I will love you. May 27th, 1988. It's a little ditty called Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
What? No. Nice.
I've seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Have you seen this, Aaron?
I haven't. No.
You really, really need to watch
it. It's a great Halloween watch. It's a great Halloween watch.
Adding it to the Letterboxd right now?
It is so, so much fun.
It's a bad movie. It's a really bad movie, but it's...
No, it's not.
I think it's a... No, it's a good bad movie. No, well, I mean, and I don't mean that in the sense of like The Room or something.
I see what
you're saying. It's like a badly made movie that's good.
Well, it's a very purposely made ode to like 1950s B movies.
Yeah.
Except it replaces giant monsters with giant killer clown, not giant, killer clown aliens that come down and they put up like a big tent in the middle of the forest and they lure people there and do things to them. It's very charming. It's quite funny. And intentionally funny, not unintentionally. It also actually manages to be a little creepy just because I think the clown designs were really good. The Chiodo brothers who directed this, they're special effects guys. They're probably most well-known for creating the Critters in the first Critters film.
Mm.
I think this might be the only film they directed. They have still to this day been trying to get a sequel to Killer Clowns from Outer Space made. It was not a hit by any means in the theater, but it was a huge cable mainstay. When I was a kid, when I was like going to my like early teens or whatever. Nice. So that's where I saw it like several times. And I think I even enjoy it more as an adult just because I have more of a knowledge now of like the types of movies that it's making fun of. It. Not really making fun of. It's not a parody. It's definitely trying to be the thing that it is.
Oh, this is definitely a cult classic horror film.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I couldn't put it higher than five, but I didn't know how to leave it off.
Nice.
That's fair. So,
just doing a Google image search. Because it's just a movie.
I've seen it. I mean, all the movies that came out, other than a couple, I've probably seen this the most. Maybe other than my number one and number two.
Well, so, I've added it to the Letterboxd watch list. So at some point, I will get around to it. So Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Ian, what's your number five?
It is, interested if this is going to get trumped, is the 2014 entry into the X-Men universe, Days of Future Past.
Nope, hold up, Aaron.
One of my honorable mentions, but
Days of Future Past came out on the 28th.
Yeah, Days of Future Past was not eligible for this category.
Oh, do we really have to pick another one if we...
Oh, really?
Phil already got my graphics.
Oh, dang it.
Now, if you want The Last Stand, that
you
came
can
out
use The Last Stand
right?
category.
Uh-huh. Okay, in that case, Return of the Jedi.
Or Apocalypse. No, I'm just, yeah.
What'd you say, Return of the Jedi?
Return of the Jedi, yeah.
Hey, Aaron, if you wouldn't mind.
Cool, that's my number five.
I've got to find another number four.
You got time.
Sorry,
listen, I don't understand why it's so hard to understand this fully arbitrary and nonsensical rule.
Then I actually don't know Aaron's number one because his would not be eligible, but I was thinking.
Right. So back around me for my number four.
Aaron, Singing in the Rain was like 2 days off from this list. Sorry, buddy.
That's all right. All right, so my number four might get trumped. I don't know. Top Gun Maverick from last year.
Do it.
Honorable mention.
All right.
It was my number four as well.
All right. So this.
Oh shoot! It's my number four.
Oh well, then we can just talk about it.
Well, wait, John, you had it.
It's my honorable mention.
Oh, okay.
Why do you hate this movie, Jonathan?
Seriously,
it's all right. we've talked about a lot about this movie in the last year because it was probably the biggest surprise and is it fair to say the biggest hit of last year
for me?
just with all kind of audience, I just think the staying power of it, probably the only one that we compete with it, maybe The Way of Water had a lot of staying power, but I think this was a bigger hit than The Way of Water.
Is what it should be.
I do
if
too.
You consider it that way. So, what do you guys want to mention about it, Andrew or Ian?
I love it.
Hold My Hand. I've been listening to that song a lot lately, and it could have given the RRR song a run for its money at the Oscars. The more I listened to it, the less certain I felt I am feeling about my pick, even though I know that we were right.
Just dial up that RRR song and watch it once, and it'll all be okay.
Gotta give me some suspenders too.
Jonathan, what is your number four?
Rook, I really like Top Gun Maverick, by the way. Just not as much as well, my number four was going to be the amazing Rennie Harlan vehicle, Cliffhanger, but can't.
Yeah, I just got the 4K steelbook of that today.
Huh?
I just got the 4K steelbook of Cliffhanger today.
Oh, my God. I love Cliffhanger so much. Yeah. That might be my favorite Stallone film now. I don't know. It's up there. I'm probably missing something.
Yeah.
Although another Stallone film that I almost wanted to pick but wasn't eligible was Rocky III.
Both movies better with Kevin Kline, I think.
So I will pick my first honorable mention, I guess. I'll throw in my number four. Yeah, I heard that. There's like no one that's going to understand that except for me.
No, that's a reference nobody will get.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now I'm getting mad again.
Like, did you? I love it.
Anytime you want to derail Jonathan,
mention Kevin Kline.
Say Kevin Kline should be in Tango and Cash and piss me off.
He should have been warming up.
I'm going to go with my first honorable mention for my number four. This actually came out on May 26, 1971. It is a movie that was actually remade 6 or 7 years ago. It's called The Beguiled. I believe it's Don Siegel, but it's definitely Clint Eastwood. And it's Clint Eastwood plays this guy that basically he's wounded, he's hurt. I can't remember what war it is. It might be the Civil War. I can't remember, but he gets hurt. He ends up in this convent, and these nuns are taking care of him. And I don't really want to say anything past that. Because it's a wild movie, and it's especially an interesting movie in 1971.
That's a Sofia Coppola movie, isn't it?
Yeah, she remade it, yes.
Yeah.
Correct, with Nicole Kidman, yeah. And they're very similar, but I will say, I mean, it just plays really interesting in 1971 because it definitely plays more like a male gaze film versus the Sofia Coppola movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that actually works for it in a weird way because it just, I don't know, it just makes it a little more tense. It makes it a little, it definitely feels almost more like a horror film at times than just a straight-up drama. Or at least a thriller. It feels like more like a thriller, which makes sense. It's Don Siegel. It's Clint Eastwood. You know, they did Dirty Harry together and whatnot. So, but it's a really, really cool film. It's a film from the 70s. I don't think it's talked about enough, even though there has been a remake. But that remake, I guess, wasn't, you know, a big hit or anything. So most people might have forgotten about that at this point. But it's a really good movie if you're in the mood for something from the 70s you haven't seen.
My dad handed me the DVD of this 3 years ago, and I just still... And now I feel really bad for having not watched it, because I'm like, I like Clint Eastwood, but I haven't heard of this movie.
It's kind of a tough film to watch at times, too, just because of the subject matter. I don't know. It's really interesting. It's really interesting. I like it quite a bit.
It's now further up my list, for sure. It's now just gathering dust on my shelf.
I hope that's a good thing. You might hate me after you watch it. I don't know.
One thing I can be certain of when Jonathan's on the show is that my Letterboxd watch list will beef up by the end of the show. So
nice.
I have added that one as well. All right. On to our number threes. I would be surprised if this one didn't get trumped. I have 1979's Alien.
Trump.
Yeah.
Trump.
All right. Andrew, what do you have at number three?
It's going to get trumped. I have a new hope.
Trump. Oh, wait. Actually, hold on a second. I might. Oh, yeah. Trump. Oh, no. I have it at number three also. Sorry.
Ian, what do you have at number three?
I am Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Also not eligible.
March
24th. What? Oh, for good. The Beguiled.
That's what I thought Aaron's number one was going to be.
Really? I do love The Last Crusade.
Did
I wish
it
was
on
eligible.
The email? I thought it just said May 26th ish. That's all I know.
It said within a day.
You didn't
either
give
way.
Us a range.
I did in the email. Within a
he
day,
did.
Either way. Yes.
He did because I followed the rules.
Okay,
I
totally fine. A New Hope. A New Hope has now been promoted to number three.
By this point, Ian's number one is going to end up being like Smokey and the Bandit or something. Which nobody's picked yet.
All right, so on to our number twos. This is where I have Moonrise Kingdom,
2012.
I have recently decided that this is my favorite Wes Anderson movie. Ooh, even nice. Above Fantastic Mr. Fox, which used to hold that that term. I just think there is something so interesting about this story and these kids, and it's quirky as all Wes Anderson things are, but I just think the narrative here is it draws me in more than any other Wes Anderson movie does. So yeah, I really, really like Moonrise Kingdom.
It's really good. It was an honorable mention for me.
I think Andrew, you had it at number 4, I believe.
Five.
Number 5. Yeah. Did you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, it's, I wish, Bruce Willis got to do more films like this, you know, because he was just absolutely great in it. He was mm-hmm. probably, besides the kids, he was probably my favorite part of the movie. I don't know, man. Edward Norton is just so, whenever Edward Norton does a PTA or a Wes Anderson movie, it's just magic. So mm-hmm. yeah,
even
I
when
absolutely
he's just
love
voicing
it.
The character, like he's so good in Isle of Dogs.
Yeah,
it's yeah. awesome.
Yeah. All right, your number 2, Andrew.
This is where I have Alien.
Trump.
Jonathan, your number 2.
My number 2 is, I'm going to guess, the oldest film on all the list. I could be wrong, but it's from 1956. It came out on May 26th. It is a little Western called The Searchers.
Mm. Wait, Searchers didn't come out.
That's what I saw.
I see that one.
I found that it came up when I was looking at, I just went to Wikipedia and looked at each year, and then I looked at the stuff that was released.
Released I have March 13th in 1956, but yeah.
Fine. Hold on.
No, I'm on.
Listen, hold if it. We've learned one this thing, chaos. We will never do a category like this
nope.
again.
I think you may have, it's May 26th?
Google told me March 13th, 56.
Yeah, I just saw it on Wikipedia. Wikipedia is not always right, though. Okay,
it's,
hold on.
On IMDb, it says May 26th as well. So there's double confirmation.
Well,
give it to him.
IMDb says May 16th.
No, that's you got to scroll down past the premieres.
It's fine. No, it's fine. It's totally fine. I have.
Let's
really
count
good
it. Listen, if it says May 26th somewhere, I'm not seeing it. We can count it. Let's talk about The Searchers.
Okay, cool. The Searchers is, if not my favorite Western, it's in that category. It's probably John Wayne's best performance, although, I don't know, at least as far as Westerns go, he's really good in The Quiet Man. It is, it's interesting, though. The character John Wayne plays is a very, very unpleasant person.
He's just a little racist. He's just a little racist.
Which, and we've learned some, you know, it's hard to sometimes know if that kind of mirrors real life, some stuff we've heard about mm-hmm. John Wayne, but I don't really know. I didn't know him personally, so I, you know, who knows? But so it's not the most comfortable movie, but I think John Ford, who's one of the best directors ever, when Orson Welles was asked who his three favorite directors were, he said John Ford.
Yep.
It's a really gorgeous movie. It's one of the most beautiful movies to look
phenomenally
at.
Gorgeous.
Yes, phenomenally gorgeous. John Wayne, like I said, he plays a really interesting and really compelling character that you're not supposed to like him. I mean, I think it's all intentional. So I don't know if it's as problematic as some people say it is. Obviously, the way something hits you is the way it hits you. I mean, I'm not going to judge that. But I mean, I do think that he's not supposed to be a good person. I don't think there's anything in the movie that makes it seem like he is.
No, our moral compass.
Although you could argue that the movie does paint him as the hero at one point. But
I think our moral compass is Jeffrey Hunter's character.
Jeffrey Hunter's in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm watching it. Yeah,
and Natalie Wood, a very young Natalie Wood, plays
Vera Miles.
Plays the girl that gets kidnapped. It's a girl that gets kidnapped, or goes away with some Native Americans.
Spoilers.
And then John Wayne, huh?
Nothing.
Oh, and then John Wayne and Hunter, they go try to rescue her.
He's trying to spoiler shame you for a 70-year-old movie.
I don't know if that really spoils anything. That's kind of right at the beginning.
I know. So, I'm just being
big
old butthole.
But it's a great movie that may or may not have come out on May 26th. It's really hard with some of these older movies, though, to know when their exact release date was.
Well, according to the IMDb, it did come out on May 26th. We're going to go with May 26th here because it had kind of like a subtle, like the premiere was May 16th in Chicago.
Oh,
but,
right.
But then there's like wide a Buffalo release. Premiere on the 17th, a Detroit premiere on the 18th, a Cleveland premiere on the 22nd, and then it just says United States, May 26, 1956. So, yeah, I think we're good to call that.
Justified.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. It's a movie I came to later in life, too. I wasn't really into Westerns until I got older, and then I just started kind of deep dive. I just kind of started watching all of them, and this is one that's always stood out to me. So, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think, Ian, that means we're on to your number two. Is that right?
I believe so. I mean, such as my list is. Empire Strikes Back?
No.
Doesn't qualify?
No. Doesn't qualify.
Right, that came out like May 10th or something, I think.
Really?
No, it was around there.
The
it
list
was like,
that I read was garbage 20th. Then.
I thought it was at least 5 or 6
It was
days
Memorial
later.
Day, but it wasn't the 25th, 26th, or 27th. Yeah,
they didn't used to know when Memorial Day was.
Well, this is just a crumb shoot, isn't it? So
Men in Black 3 came out on the 25th.
Right. I like Men in Black 3.
Well, there you
Let's
go.
Put it
it's
in
your
at number
two.
Yeah.
Josh Aaron Brolin. Trumpet. No, I'm joking.
That would Brolin. Be amazing.
Josh Brolin is genuinely excellent in that movie. I do like Men in Black 3 quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I do too, actually. I actually do. It was in my honorable mentions.
I mean, it's a lot better than 2. I still think the first one's the best one.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Without
it's a
doubt.
Good sequel. Yeah.
That 2012, that Memorial Day 2012 was a
yeah,
was a
strong.
Good weekend. It was Moonrise strong. Kingdom, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, also The Intouchables.
Intouchables, yeah.
Intouchables.
Not The Untouchables.
Oh, wait. Yeah. The Untouchables, wait. They do like a, yeah. an anniversary yeah. screen?
Intouchables, wait, the new one or the old one?
The old one.
I have never seen that.
Are
so
you
that's
kidding?
Really good.
It came out during this time?
I think so. I could be wrong. It was on one of my lists. I could be wrong. As we've discovered, this category is all the nonsense.
Didn't they remake that?
They did with Cranston, right?
And Kevin Hart. Was it that movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyhow, I think we're ready for our number ones. 5/25/77. One of those few dates that you know what people are talking about when they mention Star Wars A New Hope came yeah. out. So,
meh.
Which makes May 4th make even less sense. Like, why isn't it May 25th?
What's that?
Why isn't
like,
Star
that
Wars Day May 25th?
May 4th makes less
oh, right.
sense.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
should be May 25th should be Star Wars Day.
Yeah. May the 25th be with you.
That's fine. It's when it got released.
Works fine.
Or they could have just released Star Wars on May 4th and said it's all
a
big castle.
You guys have mentioned this. I think I had to trumpet a couple times. But yes, I do love A New Hope. And I know that there are Star Wars movies that we like to say are better, including Empire, those kind of things. But man, it's just so hard for me when you talk about favorites to put any Star Wars movie above this first one. Because I watched this movie hundreds, if not thousands of times growing up. Like, you know, I was in the center of the Star Wars universe with the first one coming out a year after I was born. And almost exactly a year after I was born.
Mm.
And then, you know, every 3 years after that, I think Return of the Jedi was 84 or 83.
83. Yeah, Empire was 80.
Yeah, it was 80 and 83. So every 3 years. And so, yeah, you know, I was.
And
just...
they'd re-release them. I mean, back then mm-hmm. they would re-release these movies. So, like, I saw Star Wars in the theater, but I just didn't see it till like 1981 or something.
Right. Yeah.
Why isn't his lightsaber white like it is on the poster?
It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I just found myself with Star Wars. It was hard to get invested because whether they won or lost, somebody
oh
wrote it.
Man.
I like the basketball scenes. Those are my favorite.
Get wrecked, Ian.
Wow. Yeah. I'm not coming back.
I mean, Luke was such a hustler, man. He was.
Yeah. He would shoot wild.
Nobody
rats.
Thought C-3PO would be a good tag team in a basketball game, but man, it worked out.
It did work out.
Yeah.
Andrew, what is your number one?
Return of the Jedi. Do we do nice. Our number twos?
Wait, are we talking about yes. Star Wars 2 since we had
didn't
them
do
on
our number? Oh wait, so my number one is different than everybody else's. Okay,
your number two got trumped by both Ian.
Are we not talking about? Are we not talking about Star Wars before we get to that though? The other ones that put on the list.
Oh, go for it.
I don't care. I was just curious.
No, sure. Go ahead.
It was my number three. So,
yeah. Yeah, chat about it.
I just wanted to say, just to echo off what Aaron said, and I say this, Star Wars and Empire, and I refuse to call it A New Hope. I refuse to call it Episode 4. It is Star Wars. That is the name of the freaking movie.
I understand
movie.
That.
Kevin Kline would have been terrible in it.
he says you.
I think it's the better movie of the two. Those are my two favorite Star Wars movies. Not even close. I think those are the two best Star Wars movies. Although I do love Return. I'm not going to... Mm-hmm. Like, Return was definitely one I loved.
Phantom Menace.
But
I have...
As I've gotten older, I think Star Wars is better than Empire. But it's not by much. I mean, we're talking about two A-plus movies, right?
Yeah.
So...
I agree.
But I just love this one. I just think it all comes together in an interesting way. And I don't know. It's just the beginning of everything. And it's just every time I watch it, you know, and I may or may not have a copy of the original version of it. But I don't really even mind the special editions that much. Return bothers me a little bit, but the other ones, those are fine too. I just think it's crazy that there's a lot of people, probably Ian, have you ever seen the original cuts?
I couldn't tell you if I had it on VHS.
You probably did.
So I probably have. I feel like I have, because it was an old copy. It was my dad's copy. Yeah. So yeah, I feel like I have.
But I just wanted to mirror what Aaron said and say, no, there's nothing wrong with saying Star Wars is better than Empire.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, you're number one.
Return of the Jedi. Hinted at earlier.
Honorable mention.
Yeah, this one just has way more emotional beats that really that I think hit. It's the conclusion of this Anakin story arc. You know, that fight with him and Luke on the Death Star is just so heartbreaking because right before they quit, you just see so much hate flowing through Luke, and you. There's a part of you that really believes that he might, you know, get tempted to, you know, strike his father out in hate, and then he won't be a Jedi. But then he quits, and then there's the redemption of Darth Vader at the very end. It's just such a beautiful story. Ewoks are adorable.
Yeah, they are. They're fine.
Yeah.
I don't understand the hate.
Because Star Wars fans hate everything Star Wars.
Ian, you've never said anything more true.
1983.
It's not far from the truth.
Ian, you've never said anything in your life that's more truthful than that.
Uh-huh. I thought this movie, because this came out when I was 7, and this is the first movie I saw in the theater multiple times too, and I mean, it just God blew me away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jonathan, what's your number one?
I think it's the same as Ian's. Alien? Is that yours too, Ian?
Yeah, if you're going to disqualify it, why not? Yeah.
No, Alien counts.
Of course it does. Why not?
May 25th, 1979.
I'm sorry you didn't know how to read the rules.
Yeah, this is my number one.
This is one of my all-time favorite movies. I love this movie a lot. It's a haunted house movie in space, and it's just that concept sounds like it would be so easy to do, but like, I don't know. It's amazing. Ridley Scott just firing on all cylinders. Sigourney Weaver doing an awesome job in one of the best characters ever to be in a film, I think, Ripley. The practical effects in this movie are just unbelievable. I love this movie so much. It still to this day scares the crap out of me. There's still, even though I've seen these moments so hundreds of times, I still oh God, sometimes I have to look away. It's crazy.
Oh, the John Hurt scene every single time I get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And the other woman, I can't remember her, the character's name, but her, when she gets attacked
Veronica Cartwright's character.
Veronica Cartwright. Yeah. Yeah. Her character. Yeah. That's a really tough
scene. What was it? Lambo?
Something like that.
Yeah.
That sounds right. I'm gonna watch this tonight. Happy birthday to me!
Nice.
Now that I'm talking about it, no, I just love this movie.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, talk about it, Ian.
Yeah, I love it. This is the Star Wars movie that came out in the 70s. it's the one that we should be talking about. We'll get shunned and confused looks at this, but I enjoy it more than Star Wars. I genuinely do. I think.
I think it's a better movie.
I think it's in a different league in terms. It's a different type of movie, obviously, but a different league in terms of like realism and this, I feel like I'm on the Nostromo every time that I watch this movie. I feel like the technology holds up. I can see us clonking around the galaxy. The state of like our rocket, our shuttle ship, shuttle. What do we call them?
They're blue collar
shuttles. Ships.
Sure.
Whatever.
Spaceships.
Whatever they've been scuttled as now, and the scuttlebutt is.
Scuttlebutt. Scuttlebutt.
This one has really done a number on me. But I love it. I love this movie. It is scary. One of the best creature designs.
Brian Johnson.
Ever. Love it.
And I just love the blue collar aspect to it too. Like these aren't like
yes.
astronauts. Yeah, you know, they're getting
not
a
like
paycheck.
Superheroes. They're just people that need money. Like they're just you know, they are
the only ones that are justified money. In saying, I didn't sign up for this shirt. Yeah. And I'm not getting paid enough because it's true.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that aspect of it even makes it more intense sometimes.
Yeah. A lot like Armageddon in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing. Too bad Armageddon didn't come out. Too bad our birthday is a July 4th.
Armageddon.
Yeah, right there.
I had Alien.
Armageddon's the one with the Criterion release, though I will admit that. That's
it's
kind
a
of
fair
funny.
Point. It's a fair point. Alien is my number three. Nice. Just spectacular suspense movie making. It's just really, really good. Really well done.
And then he followed this up with Blade Runner, right? That was his next, wasn't it, I think?
He might have been.
82?
That sounds
probably
right.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Ridley was a busy boy back then.
I mean, still is.
It's
Dude's
true.
Like not slowing down. He's like the Alice Cooper of directors.
All right, I'm going to run through some honorable mentions. If I miss some of yours, then
no,
you can...
I'm not saying any of mine. I'm not mentioning another damn movie.
I think all mine are ones you guys had in your list. I think
I wanted to mention Close, which came out last year. Came out the same weekend as Top Gun Maverick, and it's really good. And a lot of people haven't seen it, so high recommend for that. I think we should mention From Russia with Love, and that was 1964. Back to the Future Part 3, you know, great stuff.
Yeah.
So worth mentioning, I think an honorable mention. And I like Solo more than most, so I'll throw that one out there as well.
And I went over to ask the gurus on CivPop what they thought, and their top three picks were Alien, Top Gun Maverick, and A New Hope. Sorry, Star Wars.
No, you can say whatever. I'm just saying I refuse to say it.
Jonathan Rage quits the show.
He just runs out the door, and 3 seconds later, he bursts through mine like the Kool-Aid guy.
It's just like, say it like that movie name to my daughter. She's like, well, which one? Like, there's only one.
It's like Highlander.
Oh, wow.
All right, let's move on to our buried treasure. Ian and Jonathan, you're our guest, so you will go last. Kick us off, Andrew. What do you want to let people know about that they may not have heard about?
Last week, we were kind of rushing out whenever we were talking about our buried treasures and stuff.
Yes.
But you mentioned that you saw a movie called Sisu that you figured that I would think
that
is the greatest movie
love.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I'd already seen Sisu. And,
oh, okay. And was I right?
It's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, then I was wrong. I thought you would love it more than that.
The gratuitous violence got old really, really quick for me.
I see.
But that first 20 minutes is like some of the best cinematography I'd seen in a very long time from like an art house movie.
That's what I really liked about it. I loved the look of it. Just that character. I just kept getting back up. There was something about that. It's very graphic.
But that's not my buried treasure. My buried treasure is the Guy Ritchie's The Covenant.
Do it.
I've heard good stuff about this.
Did you not cover this on the show?
I don't think we did.
Oh.
No. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I thought it was very good. I love Dar Salim's performance is great. He was the heart and soul of this entire movie, and he just pushed like the determination to not only be heard, but to do what's right that's going through his head. And how... I didn't know what this movie was going to be about. And then once I kind of understood what I thought the movie was going to be about, it shifted because where I thought the movie was going to go ended halfway through and it became a different movie. And I'm like, oh, snap. Absolutely loved it. I think it's just, it's a brilliant film. It's one of my favorites of the year so far.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see it. I'm looking forward to it.
I also want to talk about one of my favorite films of the year so far. A little film called The Artifice Girl. this is available on VOD from a brand new writer-director named Franklin Rich. And this is a movie about the oncoming AI deluge and the idea that artificial intelligence and artificial superintelligence specifically, that there are a lot of ramifications to it that we have to think through. And I think this movie does a really good job of putting those big ideas into a real world scenario and actually using a very interesting narrative. It's a three act play. And I think the first two acts are the strongest. Although I do actually like how the movie finishes. But this, if you want to know the recipe for a movie that just gets Aaron, this is the recipe where it has technology, the idea of what will the future be like, the idea that there's so many questions this movie leaves you with, like conundrums that you kind of like walk away going, you know, how do I feel about this? What do I think about this? I found this movie to be bold in some really interesting ways and really well done. And there's even some really neat little directorial flourishes that he does in this that that are subtle and I liked a lot. So The Artifice Girl, which is available on VOD, I think it's like $5. And I highly recommend you paying that and checking it out because it's
and
really good.
He's in it. He's one of the main characters.
It's true.
He's incredible.
There's really four main actors, mm-hmm. and he is one of them, and he gives a great performance for sure.
Nice.
So yeah, The Artifice Girl is my buried treasure. Ian, why don't you go next?
This is the best birthday present you could have given me, because this is probably the only time where I'll be the guest and I'm not going last.
It's true.
The guest always goes last.
That's
true. But I'm not.
That's still not better than cupcakes.
It's yeah. true. It's still not better than Kevin Klein. So I'm going to pick
Kevin Klein cupcakes. Happy birthday to me.
I'm going to pick an app actually called Mighty Doom. This is so much fun, and they, unlike certain other companies that will remain nameless, EA, they aren't doing like a pay to win, glass ceiling, must give me money in order to progress through the game. So it's a top-down platform type game where you just go through levels, it auto-fires your main weapon, and then you can choose two special weapons that have a cooldown that you fire. And you just, if you've played the Doom games before, it's that. You're blowing up bad guys, clearing a level, getting to the next level, clearing the level, getting to a next level. But it's just really, really fun. It's a really crisp interface, beautiful graphics, incredible soundtrack. This is like one of my favorite things about the Doom games was the heavy guitar mm-hmm. behind it. This has that in spades. Like you just sit nice. In the menus and you are just like pumped and ready to go with some incredible, disgusting guitar riffs.
When the Doom music kicks in.
Yeah, it's so good. And the customizable nature of some of the bits is a little bit limited. Like there's not much to do when you start upgrading things, but the level of difficulty kind of gets nice and hard as well, but in a way where I don't feel like it's trying to trick me out of the game and into like buying some upgrades, just into I have to get better at this and I have to use better tactics to progress through the game. It does have a monthly season pass thing where you can upgrade and get extra whatsits, but it's $7 and I paid that because it's fun and otherwise it's free to play. It's if you like the Doom games and you like this type of game, then I would recommend downloading it for free, people. It's free and it's fun.
It's amazing the free entertainment we have at our fingertips.
I was stunned by it. Like, you could happily play this and not buy the season pass. It's great.
British, when you said bits, I assumed you meant testicles, and then you said, and it gets harder. So that I was laughing in my head.
Yeah. This game will not give you an erection. If it does, please seek therapy.
Consult a physician.
After four hours.
Yes. Your own Mighty Doom. Jonathan, what is your buried treasure?
Well, I wanted to talk about my favorite Kevin Klein movie. It's called Stop and My Mom Will Shoot. I want to talk about a TV show that is going to be airing its last episodes on, I believe, June 2nd, which is a week from when we were recording. That show is called Manifest. This is a show I watched. So this was a show that was originally on a network. I do not remember which one. Maybe ABC, maybe NBC. I think for 2 or 3 seasons. I think just the final season is on Netflix. So it got canceled. Netflix picked it up and gave them 20 episodes to end their series. They showed the first 10 of those about a month and a half or 2 months ago. And then they're showing the last 10 starting on June 2nd. I assume they're dumping them all at once. They usually do. But when this was originally on, I watched maybe the first like 5 or 6 episodes, and then for whatever reason just fell off. My wife kept watching it though, and just kept telling me, you got to get back to this. And so I finally did because I was thinking about it, but then it got canceled, and I'm like, well, it's not going to have an ending. But then Netflix picked it up, so I went in and watched them all. This is a really good show. It's definitely got that kind of quality of like a Lost. It still feels like one of those shows that was kind of chasing what Lost had, but like so many years later. If you don't know what it's about, it's this flight that goes through some turbulence and then lands. And this is all like in the first 10 minutes of the series. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything. Lands. They think they've only been gone. Like, they think they've been like on a 3-hour flight. When they land, they find out they've been missing for 5 years. I think it's 5. Yeah. And so it starts off basically about just kind of trying to figure out what's going on, but also just all the changes and stuff that have happened with like their loved ones and their kids and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then it really, like, one thing I figured out, especially about like maybe the second season, you can tell that like they clearly had a plan. Like, this isn't like, in that way, it's not like Lost, where it doesn't feel like they're just making up stuff as they go. It's a really tight narrative, which I love. And I can't wait to see how they end it, because one of the best cliffhangers I've ever seen was at the end of the first 10 episodes. So I'm really, really excited about it. So if it's a show, because it was on a network, maybe you never watched it and just didn't think anything about it, it's definitely one I would urge you to pick up. And it's really not that many episodes, because even most of the network seasons, I think they only aired like 15 or 16, you know, so it's not super time consuming. As it's not like a Law and Order or something like that, you know, but yeah, I recommend it. Manifest. It's good stuff.
There you go. That's Manifest on Netflix. Mighty Doom is available in your app store. The Artifice Girl is on VOD, and Guy Ritchie's The Covenant also just landed on VOD, if you want to check that out. Before we finish out today, I mentioned we have an announcement, did a tease that I have an announcement. And I felt like this was something I owed you if you are a fan of the podcast, if you're someone who's listened for a while, or even if you're just tuning in for the first time. This podcast has, in some form or another, been around over a decade, and we have, as much as possible, brought you content every single weekend to be able to bring you stuff for those 10 years. I'm not saying we didn't miss a weekend, but usually we'd put up something small or, you know, whatever those That's weekends. Impressive. I am entering into a season where I'm going to be doing a little bit more traveling, and I wanted to let you know and just be honest with you that is no longer something we are going to make an extended effort to make happen. There will be weeks where SifPop will go dark, and I wanted to let you know that ahead of time. One of those weeks will be next week, wanted to let you know that. And I think it's going to work out just fine. I honestly think many times, because we review 2 movies a week, oftentimes we're pulling in things like White Men Can't Jump, or the week before it was Hypnotic, or whatever it might be, that we don't necessarily need to review on this podcast. So when we come back 2 weeks from now, we'll be reviewing Spider-Verse. We'll definitely have, you know, some conversation on that. And we'll be reviewing Rise of the Beasts. So there will be 2 big movies for us to chat about on that weekend. But I wanted to give you a heads up, let you know about that for this coming season. And thank you for your support and your patience as the show evolves and continues to, do different things. We're not going anywhere. There are just going to be some weeks. I would say multiple weeks a year, maybe even like one a month, where the show will go dark. So, and we'll do our best to let you know ahead of time, just so you're not, you know, confused when an episode doesn't show up, something like that, as it happens. Aside from all of that, again, if I could express one thing, it's my love and thanks and gratitude for even just caring what we have to say, you know, once a month, let alone once a week. That's kind of mind blowing. So thank you for doing that and for continuing to listen to what goes on. So yeah, there you go. That's the announcement. And we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast. Woo-hoo! Ian managed to spin a fidget spinner, and it's been spinning this entire time.
Hasn't
stopped once for an hour and a half. Yeah. That's amazing.
And the fact that it's off camera has nothing to do with the veracity of that fact.
That's right. That's right.
You just can't pick it up. Ian really liked White Men Can't Jump. For some reason, that really
fun stuff. Yeah, fun stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you to Jonathan for being here today. Jonathan, woo! Anywhere you want to send people online to check out your stuff?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SamLoomis13. You can also find me on Letterboxd. I think you just have to look up my name, I'm pretty sure. I know my Letterboxd link is on my Twitter handle, so you can find it there as well. That's really about the only places I'm at. And then obviously check out CinemaSins, TVSins, CommercialSins every week if you can. Fun stuff.
There you go. Ian, what about you? Where do you want to send people?
Twitter! Which I'm not on very, very much. I'm actually more active on the Captain's Pod Twitter handle talking about Star Trek things. So come and hang out and talk Star Trek, which is at Captain's Pod CS, and listen to Captain's Pod podcast.
And thank you as well.
Just go to Twitter. You don't need to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, it's great.
And thank you, Ian, as well, for hanging out with us today. Really do appreciate it.
Whatever.
Also, thank you to our SIFPOM members for giving monthly to make the show a real thing, and the website, for that matter. If you want to check it out, it's $3 a month is where it starts, and you can find all that info at patreon.com/SIFPOP. Lots of ways to connect with the podcast. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen, or you can email us, feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than convincing me that those hoops were higher than 9 feet off the ground. We will be back 2 weeks, as mentioned, to talk about Spider-Verse and Rise of the Beasts, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
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 When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.